It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Welcome to Declare Your Independence. I'm me, Ernest Hancock, each and every day on RBN Network in the morning here from Phoenix, Arizona, from the beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. This morning, we have Lou Rockwell scheduled. They're trying to get him on now, I imagine. You guys trying to get him on? You getting him on? You calling him? You getting him on? Let me know. Numbers on the Skype. We want to talk to Lou because he has been such a resource for us. We, to the point that a lot of times you go to lourockwell.com and you'll see so many good pieces of information, articles from people that you know and should listen to. And there's so many that finally, a lot of times I just go, today on Lou Rockwell. You'll see that on Freedom's Phoenix all the time. I'll just put on today on Lou Rockwell. Just read it all, and and I'm sure it helps his traffic. It probably sure as heck helps mine. But there are so much stuff there that it's freaky. Just in the what I want to say, the how scared you can get. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. You know, it's like reading a script for a dystopia, apocalyptic. You know, but it's just facts, math. You know, Jim Rogers saying, you know, no drilling in the Gulf. What does that mean? That means more expensive oil. That means I'm buying me some oil. So you know, duh. And then it happens. You know, this is not like rocket science. Then you have things like Dr. Paul. He's up there constantly telling us exactly what is coming from Washington and exactly the impact it's going to have, and it has the impact. And the news channels do exactly what you always expect them to do. They will not even talk about what he's saying and why and build up and warning. It's always the spin afterwards. It's always after it happens. Wow, how did you know this is going to happen? I got three other predictions that's up there right now on Lou Rockwell telling you what's going to happen. What are you going to, let the people know this? Are you going to let them save, you know, half of their savings? Are you going to let them know what's going to happen with precious metals? Are you going to let them know these wars that are being done, these clandestine battles that are being fought by CIA without any civilian oversight? Are you going to allow the people to even understand what the WikiLeaks issue is? Do you know what's in the cables that they're so worried about? Do you have any understanding of how bad this thing is in the Gulf? No, you're going to talk about it and spin it and do whatever after it already happens. Where do you go? You got to have places you can trust. You know, like this show. Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. You can go to freedomsphoenix.com. And you can go to lourockwell.com. But we'll try and make sure we get Lou on, have him on by the time we get back. Because I'm telling you, you know, there is so much stuff going on that you can just look at it each and every day and at least get forewarned. Because if you don't, how are you going to prepare for what's coming? Because it's coming. We'll be right back.
There are those that just want to be left alone. and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Yeah, there's nothing you can do about it. Yeah, we're still trying to get hold of Lou. They're working it out, and we'll get it taken care of. But let me go ahead and give you some of the goodies that are on Lou Rockwell. We just put up today. You get an idea what I'm talking about. There are about, I would say a dozen articles that are put up each day. I mean, they're just high quality. It doesn't have as wide a radar screen as, say, Freedom's Phoenix, but it is very detailed and a lot of inside information on generally economics and the ramifications of them. Now, I get off on some other stuff that you need to know about, but I'm just going to give you some of the headlines. You go to freedomsphoenix.com right now, and you can see at the top of the page, let me go ahead and move it up to the top. At the top of the page, you'll see today on LouRockwell.com. Now, Lou Rockwell, many of you may not know who he is. He was, I think, chief of staff of the congressional office in Washington, D.C. in the late 70s, early 80s for Dr. Ron Paul. Oh, that's very different now, isn't it? Lou Rockwell, they run the Mises Institute. Mises is Ludwig von Mises is Austrian economics kind of thing. This is where a lot of the information comes from and the philosophy behind Dr. Ron Paul's knowledge of the economy and knowing what's going to happen. I mean, this is just, you know, it's a, you know, duh, here it goes. So the thing is that Lou is just a continuation of the economic education of America and any and everybody that will listen and getting them up to speed or at least having the resources for Dr. Paul to be able to explain things to people and then them go back and read the information that helped him to understand. It's an accumulation of data, articles, information that is there for you to understand economics. Better than the congressmen that are up there. Better than the the experts. Better than CNBC for damn Skippy, okay? This is where a lot of us, and certainly for generations, have accumulated the information, the data, the study, the research, the philosophy, the tried and true examples, the anecdotes of how an economy really works. Going all the way back to Adam Smith, The Wealth of Nations. You know, this is like not just a science, it was like discovering the law of gravity. I mean, you know, these things happen. You know, a free market is. You can have all the controls and whatever you want. In the end, the free market always wins every stake of time. So what do? Well, let's try and understand it. Now, let's just take a look at today what are some of the issues that we have. As the global system unravels, subtitle, Gold Reclaims Its Currency Status, article by Ambrose Evans Pritchard. Next story, no drilling equals higher prices, so Jim Rogers wants to buy oil. Okay, so Jim Rogers is talking about, I'm investing in oil commodities, is the way it is. The five disasters ahead before the crisis is over, article by David Gallen. Public school is a 12-year jail sentence. That's the title. And the subtitle, and bad habits are all that the inmates truly learn, says John Taylor Gatto. John Taylor Gatto was voted Teacher of the Year a couple times, I think, in New York. But he started off as kind of a substitute teacher. He was a businessman, I think. And he says, yeah, you know, I'll sub-teach a little bit here. And then he goes, oh, what the heck is going on here? He gave a great speech that had a big impact on a lot of people. And he wrote a book, The Dumbing Down of America. We had him as a speaker at last year's Freedom Summit. Last year's Freedom Summit in December, where Dr. Paul spoke for the third time. And we have John Taylor Gatto. It was riveting. You know, he took a – he goes, I got to take an eight-hour presentation or seminar day and try and put it into one-hour speech. Well, you just make it so, and he did. And it was, and he was so proud of himself, he got it, you know, in on time. He just condensed it down. It was great. He had a lot of people came to the summit just to hear John Taylor Gatto, because homeschooling is big here in Arizona. When you go to the government here to say, hey, you know what, you know, I'm good. We're just going to homeschool our kids. All you do is, you know, write on a napkin, I'm homeschooling my kids, and you just give it to them. That's what the law says. I mean, you know, I say screw them. You don't got to do anything. But, you know, there's no requirement. There's no testing. There's no certification to parents. There's none of that stuff. And homeschooling thrives here. So you can see why John Taylor Gatto would be popular. Because the one thing I learned, I want to spend a little bit of time on him. One thing that I learned in his writings, it was early 90s or even late 80s, and he gave a speech to the New York Teachers Association, or a gathering that was there where he was awarded the Teacher of the Year. And he's like, you know, this public education, this government school thing, it's very successful at what it wants to do. It wants to produce slaves. But that's it. That's all it's for. It wants to produce slaves. How does it do that? It interrupts any real learning with a bell every 45, 50 minutes. Da-da-da-da-ding. Oh, I'm sorry. It wasn't that important. Yeah, we're not going to get in depth, you know, really in depth about anything. Yeah, you got a little overview, kind of, you know, next. Regiments you. It's like Pavlovian dog, man. You know, it's like you ring the bell. Oh, time to stand up. And it just kept, they just wanted you literate enough to fill out a job application or just read the slave instructions for pulling the handle, widget, whatever. There's no critical thinking skills. There's no definition of right and wrong. Everything's subjective, and it changes all the time. It's like on purpose. And he knew this. As a teacher, he's going, look, the reason I'm successful is because I ignore all your crap. You know, you want to, you know, you're honoring me for ignoring everything that all of you guys are doing. Well, you can understand he wasn't none too popular. Eventually, he just said, "Nah, I'm good." So it's very just John Taylor Gatto. You just do a search on him, man; it just comes up. But he's getting up there. You know, he's probably at least in his 80s. You know, and he's he's slowing down a little bit. I mean, his mind's there, but you know, his body. He's can I sit down and do this presentation? Yeah, absolutely. So I had a good time. One of the other stories, the backyard homestead, how to use a small amount of land efficiently. Okay, you know, that'd be of interest. That's a definitely economy thing. You know, that's what we do here. Hey, man, got chickens? Corporatist care. Vijay Bhopati on what's really wrong with the health insurance industry. All right, I might be interested in that. Common courtesy. Simplicity, personal responsibility, lessons from Grand Central Station the government never learned. So it's just like, you know, you put a bunch of people in one place. I mean, it's amazing we get along as well as we do. And a lot of the problems that we have with interpersonal relations is because we're socially and economically engineered in such a way that you know, just survival has us or twisted our mind or government schools. Or I mean, humanity, I don't think is that bad. And that's the one problem I have with religion. I mean, you know, a lot of religion, they're just, you know, you're inherently sinful. You're fully, you're condemned at birth, and without following this tithing schedule, you're not going to make it to heaven. And I mean, I'm whoa, man. How about we appeal to the love and the humanity of humanity? You know, I did, you know, we're all, if we weren't all program hardwired to be decent, to get positive feedback from being nice to people, we'd be extinct by now. This is no, I'm appealing to the love. I'm appealing to the good in us, because I mean, what else are you gonna appeal to? You know what the bad guys do? Come on. Oh, let's see. Then they talked about the death penalty, what happened in Utah. You may go to hell and I will go to Texas. We're talking about the EPA and so on. Let's see. Hypernovas, dark energy, asteroids, the Big Rip. Why you can't defy economic law forever? 50 shocking facts about the U.S. economy. Greed, gold-plated pensions, voter anger, public employee unions go on the defensive. Yeah, by Peter Scherer. So these are articles and information that I really enjoy making available to you. because this is stuff that we need to know. So we'll click on why you can't defy economic laws forever. 50 statistics about the U.S. economy that are almost too crazy to believe. You know, we'll just pick number 50. In 2010, the U.S. government is projected to issue almost as much new debt as the rest of the governments of the world combined. That's number 50. In 2010, the U.S. government is projected to issue almost as much new debt as the rest of the governments of the world combined. You see, it's from this, and just a window in the economy and the philosophy of Austrian economics, that you can learn a lot. LouRockwell.com. FYI.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free. I want to break free. I want to break free from your lies. You're so self-satisfied, I don't need you.
Yeah, I want to break free. You know, what we're going to go do, and I left a message on Lou's cell, and it's always a time zone thing, you know, so hopefully we'll be able to get him on a little bit later, but he's not in the office, so probably getting him from home on his cell, so I'll try and get that for you, and if not, we'll reschedule him, because we've had Lou on quite a few times, and I'm sure we just had some mix-up, but then I'll get them for you, because it's definitely always a good show. But I wanted to go ahead. One thing I wanted to talk to him about, and we'll just go ahead and do it, is the 50 things that, you know, the 50 statistics about the U.S. economy that are almost too crazy to believe. And number 50, what's number 50? In 2010, the U.S. government is going to have more new debt, or about as much new debt as all of the other governments on the planet combined. You know what that is? Let me tell you what that is. That's a dead whale in the Gulf with sharks feeding on it. And they're getting down to the backbone. And there's almost nothing left. And the frenzy starts. And it's going to get mine. They know that, you know, heck, the whale's already dead. They're just, you know, picking the carcass. Well, what happens, you know, when you got roadkill and all the vultures, you can't get any more vultures' beaks onto the carcass. And there's only a little bit of meat, you know, left on the bone. You know, what happens? So it's a frenzy until there's absolutely nothing left. Then, well, then you, of course, you got the maggots, you know. And you got the little, you know, you get bacteria. I mean, it'll be pristine whale bone, you know, roadkill bone. And where did they go? They went somewhere else. They just left. They took their full bellies and they go somewhere else to do the same thing. You know, will they, you know, leave this geographical area alone then? No, there's still a lot of meat left on the bone. You know, resources of the country. You know, heck, mountains need to be leveled, which is, you know, if privately deed them, let them level it all they want, as long as they're not polluting the guy next to them. You know, so I'm, you know, this is property rights, the only thing that's going to save this kind of stuff. When you have these kind of catastrophes, and there'll be more, what happens when Wyoming and, you know, Yellowstone or, you know, Old Faithful Geyser or whatever, that whole caldera blows up? What happens then? What do you think is going on in Iceland right now? It's affecting the economy of Europe. I mean, you can't have volcanic ash clouds all over an entire continent and not affect the economy. Heck, you can't even fly. So I'm going, this is, you know, Mother Nature rules, man. You know, God puts his finger in the pie and says, guess what? Mine. So you got to be balanced. You got to be doing the right thing, because karma, whatever you want to call it, comes around. Ooh, and it's coming around. So are we just going to let them keep, you know, picking on our flesh until it's nothing but bone? That's what's happening. How are they able to do that anyway? Is it decades of government education? That might have something to do with it. Number 49, it is being projected that the U.S. government will have a budget deficit of approximately $1.6 trillion in 2010. Budget deficit. not the debt. I remember when the debt used to be $1.6 trillion, not the annual deficit. You understand the difference? Debt is an accumulation of deficits. Now we're looking at just, you know, let me see. This month I got this much in bills and this much in revenue, and the difference is $1.6 trillion. That's, wow. I mean, we're talking real money here. You know, we have a sign that we're working on that we got, you know, the design for. We just haven't cut it out for the stencil yet. But and I'm just going, you know, I know it would be a good sign for this election cycle. And when the time's right, you know, after the primaries here in Arizona, not a big secret, you know, it's like end of August, you know, we're one of the last in the nation. And then you'll have a couple of months, you know, that you got campaign time for. Or the general, and what would be after the primary, you'll have all these political signs on every corner, and about 80% of them go away after the primary. I mean, you just take them out, and you go, thank you, got all this new territory for me to make use of and put something up. What sign would I put up? Be a little Gerber baby stencil face that we have there, and it has a little baby saying something. What's she saying? Mommy, what's a $1 quadrillion? And mommy says, what? Revolution. What's a $1 quadrillion? Well, that number is going to come up. That's what's a quadrillion? That is $1,000 trillion. We are already, that's admitted to, $700 trillion in unsettled derivatives. It belonged to who? That behind it is what? It's on somebody's balance book. This is, you know, yeah, I got $100 trillion in this piece of paper that somebody owes me. Who's going to pay that? Where's that coming from? How big a bailout do you get? There's not that much money in existence. The entire planet gross domestic product is maybe $60 trillion. The entire planet for a year, $60 trillion. $700 trillion? $1 quadrillion? $1,000 trillion? It's a dead whale. And all they're doing is eating the flesh. And then it'll be gone. And then what? You get ready for a reboot. And it's like the Matrix, man. They're just going to reboot the system. To what? Same thing?
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
In constant sorrow till this day, I am the man. Constant sorrow.
Yeah, constant sorrow today. You know, I'm going to go ahead and give you guys some constant sorrow goody. You know, I want you to go ahead and pay attention. You know, we'll have a little bit of fun with it, but I mean, you know, it is it's dark. You know, get ready for it, because this is going to be some information that you definitely did not want to hear. But, you know, you need to know it anyway, so I'm going to share it with y'all. This is just to get a concept of how bad it is. Because as Americans, the one thing that has really been cultivated has been our optimism. That's one thing. Yankee ingenuity. Yeah, get her done. Get her done. You know, and that's great. That's a very powerful thing. Positive. The power of positive thinking is powerful. I mean, it is an amazing thing. It is what pulls people out of the worst possible circumstances is oftentimes just a perspective. But you don't want to be delusional. You know, you don't want to be the Black Knight in the Monty Python movie Holy Grail. You know, he chops off his arm and he goes, it's only a flesh wound. Chopped off his other arm, both his legs. He's just a stump sitting there. Come back here, I'll bite you to death. I mean, you know, it's good to have that kind of fortitude, but I mean, dang, you know, there's like limits. The blood runs out eventually. Well, we're bleeding. This is how much. If you went and spent a dollar every single second, it would take you more than 31,000 years to spend $1 trillion. If you want to spend a dollar every second, well, you see all these graphics about, you know, dollars stretching around the moon and back. You put them end to end, all that kind of stuff. So it gives you some of this, trying to give you a concept of how much $1 trillion is. You know, if you spent $1 million every single day since the birth of Christ, you still wouldn't have spent $1 trillion by now. Now, trillion. 1 trillion is a lot. 1,000 trillion is a quadrillion. Yeah, you getting it? Total U.S. government debt is now up to 90% of gross domestic product. Just the government debt, just the IOUs, just what we owe, not what we're making, not what heck we don't. What do we got for it? You know, a bunch of what? You know, so I'm. You know, what do we have that is of value to me that the federal government spent my money on? Other than, I don't know, IRS Army, okay? What do I have that benefits me right now? You know, the roads, the schools, and all this stuff's local. You know, what do they got? The interstate? Battleships? What is benefiting me right now? That military is making me less safe. And those that are, you know, all going on about invasion and immigration and terrorism and all that kind of stuff, I don't see it on the borders. So what benefit is it to me? They're just making people mad, wanting to come over here and hurt me because they're socially and economically engineering them over around the world. So I want to know if 90% of our gross domestic product, I mean, everything that we make is equal to, you know, 90% of that is equal to just our debt. How can we survive? We can't. Not as a country, not as this debt, not as you're not going to milk the people enough to be able to pay that. It's impossible. It was never possible. They knew this. They didn't care. They killed the whale and are eating the flesh. Total credit market debt in the United States, including government, corporate, and personal debt, has reached 360% of gross domestic product. Okay, so we do that again. Total credit market debt in the United States. You know, this is just debt. You know, we got to pay it back. You know, what are you going to do? You know, get it from the government to pay back the corporate, or the corporate, you know, is going to pay you a big enough salary so you can, you know, do away with your personal debt, or all the personal debt's going to be, you know, paid for by what? You know, the government, they're going to give you the money? Or is the government going to be able to tax corporate and personal enough after they got this enormous debt to pay off their debt? You see what I mean? It's just accumulated one big giant debt, 360% of gross domestic product. You know, the production of America. Just a debt. So how could it get that bad? What, nobody noticed? Of course we did. You know, libertarians have been screaming this. The Mises Institute started back in, I think, the 80s. You know, I should check that before I go saying that. But, you know, the thing is there is no fixing it. There is just surviving it. That is the point that I'm trying to make. We need to survive this thing. That is all that we got to do, and you're not going to survive it if you don't know what you're going to have to survive. Okay, let's take a look. The Ludwig von Mises Institute was established in 1982 under the direction of Margaret von Mises, widow of Ludwig von Mises, who chaired its board until her death in 93. Lew Rockwell, Jr. is the founder, a former president, and currently the chairman since 09. Douglas French is current president. The late economist Murray Rothbard, ooh, that's a goodie too, was a major influence on the Institute's activities and served as its academic vice president until his death in 95. Among others, Frederick von Hayek, Lawrence Fertig, and Henry Hazlitt also assisted in both its construction and continued scholarly development. I mean, these are the big boys. These are the ones that predicted everything. You know, Economics in One Lesson, remember that? Now, that was the Hazlitt book. All right, so let's go ahead and get back to the list. U.S. corporate income tax receipts were down 55% for the year ending September 30th, 2009. U.S. corporate income tax receipts to the government. Okay, this is, you know, how they make money. You know, we got all this income tax coming in from corporate and personal. 55% down. They're getting less than half what they got the year before. How many signs do you need? There are now 8 countries in the state of California, 8 counties, I'm sorry. There are now 8 counties in the state of California that have unemployment rates of over 20%. And that's what they admit to. You know, it's way more than this. Unemployment, when your unemployment runs out and there's no jobs out there, I have neighbors that, let me tell you what happens. Imagine you're in a neighborhood and you have, on the weekends, you'll easily have a dozen cars, you know, in front of your house, and you're doing a different project. You're making signs in the backyard. It's Friday night. You got a party. There's a bunch of people over. Everybody's got Freedom bumper stickers. Everybody's got Ron Paul. Everybody's got the, you know, I don't like the government. I love freedom. Government bad, 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 bad. Okay? You see that. And you're going, gee, I wonder what kind of people are at that party. So my neighbors, they know what's going on. They know who we. I mean, finally, they'll. You know, one of my neighbors goes to my wife and goes, "What did Ernie do for Ron Paul? I mean, you know, nothing. You know, I mean, it wasn't for anybody. It was just taking advantage of you know, an educational opportunity. But I mean, how do you explain that to somebody? How do you go? You go, but these are the people. That, you know, they were doing well in Arizona a few years ago. Oh, the construction boom. Man, heck, a third of the people were involved in construction development at one time or another in some way. So what happens when they, all of a sudden, they don't have a job? What happens when a third of the people on your street, you know, one of the breadwinners in there, the wife or the husband, is unemployed? What happens when both of them are? What happens at one neighbor, they had 3 houses that they bought on that street, and they would rent them out, you know. Now 2 of them, they're in foreclosure, and his house, he's probably going to lose it. What do you expect is going to happen with these kinds of stats? 20%? It's a lot more than that because these people have just stopped looking. They're getting small. They're getting ready to move. They're moving in with relatives and family, going back to the family farm and getting some chickens. In the area around Sacramento, California, there is 1 closed business for every 6 that are still open. Think of that. You have a little strip mall, and it'll have a dozen people in there. Every single one of these little strip malls, at least 2 of the businesses are closed. And that's about what it's like here in Phoenix, too. And you can see, I remember it was the late 90s. You almost could not find a place to lease. When we were looking for restaurant locations in 97, man, it was rough. Now, it took us 3 months just to finally get a place that we wanted. And it wasn't what we really wanted. We'd rather have had something else. But if I'd waited, you know, or got it just a few years earlier... Oh, that's how the economy resets itself. The prices go way down. Capital is reallocated. It's made better use of. The market finds it, you know, where the level is, and then it builds back up. What happens when that happens, and then it's all based on debt? It's all based on a bubble. It's all based on cheap money. It's all based on just printing dollars at a Federal Reserve, you know, electronic cash machine. It distorts the market, and it blows up again, and it crashes again. It goes, you know, it's a fleecing. It is a, you know, the sheep and the cattle getting into the chute. Yep, here we go again, you know, got a new crop. And the more that they complain, and the more that they communicate with each other, and the more that people are informed and they see what's coming, the more they have to control the flow of information. Internet controls. More brainwashing. Have a little bit more chemicals in your food or water or something. You know, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. Oh, they wouldn't do that. That would be wrong. Right. In February, there were 5.5 unemployed Americans for every job opening. This is what you see when they announce a single job in New York, Detroit, anywhere. They'll go, we are hiring for the custodian of the blah, 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 and you get 600 people show up. They want to work. And you know what's already happened. That job was, they're just going through the formalities. They already gave it to one of their buddies. You know, there was somebody that already had the job. It was already done. They're just going through the process. This is what's coming. You know, my sons work at Honeywell in manufacturing. I mean, they actually got skills, you know, machining stuff and so on. They're in their early 20s. Still, you know, one of them's still going to school. And the other, they, you know, he's, you know, saving money and, you know, accumulating their goodies and so on. They're in their early 20s. You know, they while they were in coming right out of high school, they got this job. I'm very happy. I'm like, yeah, you're going to learn a trade, man. How to make, you know, my younger son, he's 21. He bought, used a $4,000 milling machine that CNC, it's an old computer program that he got work because he's a whiz bang guy. But, you know, it's automatic. You just plug in whatever and it can make whatever. I mean, anything. He's got all kinds of ideas. He's been making, you know, programming it and making little cool things out of aluminum blocks for his wife and so on, learning how to get it all done. This is a skill that, oh, it's all gone. It's manufacturing. The ability to make stuff out of stuff is leaving this country. So where's my, even though he's like, you know, maxed out on his calculus and everything, I mean, uber brain, but what am I encouraging him to do? Learn how to make stuff with the mill, take that brain power, get new material, whatever, go to school. Which one has priority? Well, what's going to happen? Do I want him to go get a degree so he can give it to who? For what? You know, I'd love for him to continue his education just so he could get access to information about new materials coming online. Or does he just go to the internet? He goes on the forums. He talks to people. Different kind of materials that he can machine. Different program. Now you don't even have, he's got a CAD system, do blah, 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 come up with those different things that I want him to do. I need this, and I need this, and do all these ideas that I've had, and make little sketches or whatever. I'm like, here, do it. There's a little CAD system, make it go work. This is enormously valuable. 21 years old and has this experience of years already. He's already, like, you know, crew leading De La, whatever the heck it is, at Honeywell. One of my other son, they announced that, yep, your job's gone in August. Oh, and by the way, you want to work a few more weeks, you know, a month? Well, you can. You want to make a little bit more cash? Fine. Go to Mexico and train your replacement. Yay! This is where we're going right now. I'm glad they got the information, though, and the training. But, you know, what are they going to do? I mean, you know, we're family. We'll take care of each other. You know, it'll all work out. But not everybody's like that. Whew. According to a Pew Research Center study, approximately 37% of all Americans between the ages of 18 and 29 have either been unemployed or underemployed at some time during the recession. 37% of the young people, 18 to 29. Well, you know, one of my sons is about going into that. Of course, you know, maybe he has a skill. You know, he had a job offer from Boeing. They moved from Seattle to, I think it's South Carolina, North Carolina, maybe South, I think it's South Carolina. From Seattle to the Carolinas, and they said, you know, we're out of here, because Seattle just kept screwing them. Now, Washington State, they're just, you know, taxes, going to do more than regulating. And they said, you know what? We're good. We're out of here. You're lucky we're even staying in the United States. Which probably had a lot to do with their government contracts, you know, so they, United States, so they probably need to do that. But they go to the East Coast, West Coast, East Coast, we're done. Go to the Carolinas, and they say, yeah, we're opening the plant here, and they start putting out, you know, bids for, or job openings. They put it out to the planet, and all of a sudden, yeah, come work for us. Well, my son contacted, they offered him the job. Well, it's, you know, I mean, is it still available? Probably not. You know, but I want my son here. I mean, I'm not going to tell him what to do, but, you know, he knows he's loved, and I want him here. I need him to be around because I love my son. But he's also got skills. Wow. Well, that's some more of the list. I mean, we just got started. We're not even halfway through it yet, and you already can see how bad it is. We'll be right back.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, fade to black. Well, you know, the lights are going to go out in America. And then the people light them back up again, you know, because we're going to have to do it. I don't know what we're waiting on because, you know, it's not going to be done for us. We're going to have to do it ourselves. Well, that's one of the benefits of what's happening. We're going to learn that, you know, Obama going to save us? Or anybody else that's in the position, and with all this debt, what did we get for it? I guess we got a higher standard of living. I mean, we got microwaves, you know, really cool whiz bang gadgets, you know. But I'm thinking, in my opinion, we would have had more. Government is a parasite on all of this stuff. See, they want you to believe that they stimulated this, that the money provided, you know, what happens when you get to keep your money and you invest it in what you want? And what do you want? You know, of course you're going to want better communication. Government was totally out of the computer industry. They didn't even understand it in the mid-90s. They're sitting there trying to regulate, you know, and dictate the kinds of languages you're going to use in computers and the capacity of different things and the standards of. And remember all the clipper chip stuff? Every electronics had to have a piece of whatever so the government can, you know, surveil you kind of stuff. And all this, I mean, you know, I'm going, wow, you know, it was the fact that they couldn't keep up with the advancement of technology. They could not even articulate in a law what they wanted to do with something before it became antiquated and the market was on the, you know, 15 steps later or something they even heard of or thought of. You know, this I could see it happen. We were looking at technology, you know, and development in our heads of Freedom's Phoenix and the kind of stuff that we knew that individuals would be empowered with. And we saw what government was trying to do to regulate certain things. We're going, by the time you even get around to it, we don't even use that anymore. You know, we're on a totally different, you know, language, a totally different technology, a totally different whiz-bang techno-gadget. You know, it's not, seriously, this is what you're, and without this government, without them trying to get being a parasite and latching on, getting whatever they want, without that, where would we be? We'd be the Jetsons by now. You know why we're driving around in cars on roads and asphalt and everything all over and parking and highways and construction all the time and more construction, a little bit more construction, and living on top of each other and condensed in cities? You know why? Because we're socially and economically engineered that way with tax codes and zoning and limitations on what land you can get. And when you do got land, what you can do with it. And I mean, on and on and on. You know what had been so great for me? It had been like when we had our restaurant, I would have loved to have been able to build a freestanding restaurant to where I had living space above it. Like in Brooklyn. Like in Chicago. Like in New York. Like when but what's the zoning? Nope. Business here, living over there, miles away. You must commute. You must drive. You must go through. And I'm like, you know what it would have been? I had a cot put up in the employee bathroom. You know, I was so tired so many times. I folded it out just so I could take a nap. Here, you guys run, it's after lunch, after dinner, whatever, clean. I gotta rest. I mean, I was working, you know, 16-hour days and stuff, you know, day after day after day after day. I just, you know, I'm gonna lay down. You know how nice it would have been? That, hey, you know, we're getting busy. You come down the stairs from your living room. I don't get to have that freedom. I am socially and economically engineered at every turn and every aspect of our lives. I'm sick of it. And I know so are you. Are you willing to take and risk all the things that come with freedom? It's going to happen anyway. Get used to it because it's coming, whether we like it or not.